Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have one of my very favorite callers on the line, Nick, calling in from Wisconsin. Nick, I understand that you have a question about the fly and which wing should be used to cure disease.
I thought the IQ would be like the most qualified person to answer.
I
bet when he was a kid too, you know. And you know, if I don't have camels around, can I use a cow's urine?
What Nick is talking about is that Muhammad in his hadith, also much of his Quran, was dumber than a stone. I mean, he was just unbelievably stupid. And amongst the things that that he said is that if you wanted to cure fever, and fever wasn't from a disease, no, fever was from the hellfire. So fevers came from the hellfire, and the most effective way to cure a fever was to drink camel urine. So Nick wants to know if he can use cow urine instead of camel urine, because it would be more convenient. And then the other was that Muhammad claimed that that flies' wings were the source of contamination, and that Allah made the fly such that if you plucked off one wing, that wing would be the source of the contamination, but the other fly's wing, that would be the antidote for the disease. So this is Islamic medicine coming to you from what the Quran claims is the most perfect man who ever lived.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I would like to show it to others. I mean, I want to teach everyone.
Oh, absolutely. That's my view,
too. I bet they don't know. No one knows how to treat themselves. I mean,
no. And Muhammad had something like 30 or 40 hadiths, statements, where he was speaking for Allah when he explains how to do wudu, how to use the proper number of stones and the proper hand when cleaning one's
butt.
Yeah, to wipe one to wipe one's butt. it's so stunning to me that there are not only 1.5 billion Muslims in the world, that most Muslims are willing to die killing others for this religion that was promoted by not only the most stupid man who ever lived.
Did you include it in your Prophet of Doom book?
As a matter of fact, not only did I have all of a wonderful sample size of Muhammad's statements, which you just call stupid. What I did is that at the end of the book, because the Prophet of Doom presents Islam's five oldest sources, five most acclaimed sources, including the Quran, which is hadith, and the other hadith collections, which are all reports from Muhammad and his companions. It puts them in chronological order, and it presents the story of Muhammad in chronological order using exclusively the oldest sources of his words and deeds, and therefore the Quran now is presented chronologically. And at the end of the book, I said, you know, there's an entirely different way to order information, and that is by context or topic as opposed to chronology. And so at the end of the book, I have like 100 pages of Muhammad's quotes on various topics, and one of the topics is stupidity in Islam. And then I have another one called Islamic Science. And I want to tell you, you can't read it without doubling over in laughter. I mean, to say that Muhammad was stupid is way too kind to stupid people.
Anyway, I have another comment on your professional skills that you possess in producing the radio show, and how you're actually even considering quitting.
Yeah, I don't. Actually, I don't. I don't think I'm professional.
That you,
yeah, yeah. I don't think I'm professional. That's my concern.
That's why I'm not never being. I'm trying not to be sarcastic with my wife because neither one of us understand sarcasm when the other one says something. So, but yeah, you should. I'm asking you not to quit, even though I mean there's like you should listen to some GCN shows like a Truth Traveler girl or what was that other one in the morning? There's so many of them there that so bad in producing the shows. They come absolutely unprepared and. It just boggles. At least you can come to, you know, once in a while you forget, you know, words. Just, you know, trying to replace them with the alternative. It's like, it sounds like you having issues with the English in times.
That was my point, is that I listened to a number of shows on behalf of an emailer who had written me and said that they weren't able to find the archives, of these shows, which required me to listen to a number of shows, and I did, and I was disappointed by my diction. It's not.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is your diction or any of the I there's like not it's not even close to the shows that I see on you know on. I'll get the show on for you.
Okay.
There's another one that's like super bad. The one in the morning, the
well,
lady too. Something. Uncommon awareness.
I'm better than terrible, but at least what I would say.
You're better than most.
Okay. Well, that's encouraging. The reality is that I do come prepared. There is no question. I spend a lot of time reading the news and studying Yahweh's testimony, and so I do come prepared for this show. And I'm willing to present the news and Yahweh's testimony from a perspective that not one in a million people understands, and therefore there is no other place to get this information. But I can tell you, Nick, I'm not in a position now where I can even consider quitting the program for my own perceived lack of professionalism because of the fact the person now that is producing this show is the person that I began with doing this show with now over 2 years ago. And we not only have become great friends, but he just recently turned down an enormously wonderful opportunity financially for himself. To come back and manage the show. That is Scott.
Huh.
And Scott's first day back with us is today. And I was going to introduce Scott during the first hour, but, you know, we were talking about to IQ our Rasuli, and it didn't work. But just to hear the tone of your voice, is that Scott, reflects the exact...
He remembered me when I
yes.
called him.
Yeah. Absolutely. So Scott is not only back... but back permanently and back by choice and gave up a tremendous financial opportunity to come back and do the show.
Yeah, I'm guessing he really wanted to be adopted.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, Scott is adopted. He's a member of the covenant. But Scott came to the conclusion, I'll let him speak for himself here, but Scott came to the conclusion that he was happiest, he felt the most fulfilled, he felt that his life had the most... meaning his work life. We're not talking about his personal life when he was doing this.
And there's another issue, not issue, but a point. If he will take that other job and will become rich, and just think about it. In 12 years, he's gonna lose it all anyway. He's not gonna.
That's correct.
They're gonna take all the savings away, so there's no point of doing much because. It's gonna just go away. You don't save any money. You don't need it. And plus with the tribulation that's coming.
Right.
I'm not yet adopted. Did you know that?
I didn't even do
a circumcision yet.
Yes, I know. But you're close. You're close. And when I think of really how far you have come from where you are to where you are now. It's worth the the devotion that Scott and I have had to this program.
Yeah.
Oh, there's another person, by the way, that's his. You may not know that he is actually live with us now. I have his line open. Is Glenn. And Glenn is another example of why I'm glad that in spite of my shortcomings and that Scott and I have devoted ourselves to this program. Hello, Glenn.
Hello, Yada. Hello, Nick. Hello, Scott.
Did you have a position on which of the two wings it is that that causes the disease and cures it?
No, I would only use that for polemic purposes to say, look how crazy this is, you know. Certainly
do you have a, could you answer Nick's question? Probing lines want to know, if you do not have access to camel urine, can you substitute cow urine?
No.
Do you know, Muhammad claims that the sun and the moon are engaged in a race. Do you know who's winning that race?
I tend to want to go with the smaller, faster one, because the moon, you know, goes around 12, you know, goes through 12 cycles for every cycle, 1 cycle the sun goes through.
Yeah, I would go along with that. What about the location? When do you think the scientists will find the location of the muddy spring where the extraterrestrials live that the sun goes to bed each night? Do you think that we're close to finding that location?
It's somewhere near the base of the rainbow, where the pot of gold is.
Okay, so you think that we may find it?
Yeah, if you take a right at the pot of gold at the base of the rainbow and cross the River Styx, it's somewhere over there.
Oh, okay. That's encouraging. And do you think that that Muhammad and his god pal Allah unveiled the myth of life when they said that man was created from a congealed drop of blood?
No.
No. You're not going to subscribe to Islam anytime soon based upon the profound scientific insights provided by Dr. Muhammad?
No, not at all.
We've got the music playing. We'll get some input here from Scott, and I'd love to hear your questions as well, Glenn, when we return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Yes, we made an announcement in the last segment that my good friend Scott, the man who was really responsible for helping us build this program, has returned to Shattering Myths. And that his departure had been because he had been promoted into sales for GCN and subsequently was offered a very lucrative position in sales with another company. And after soul-searching and thinking and contemplating, has decided to come back to run this program. Scott, is that a fair assessment of where you've been and where you are?
Yeah, I just realized I don't like when I come to work and I'm upset at work and things are you know, I don't mind working hard and I don't mind doing what's necessary, but I don't like if all of a sudden I'm outside of work and like I'm being consumed by my job. And I started thinking about it, and I talked with my boss, and he agreed that I didn't seem happy. I didn't seem like I was having fun like I used to have when I was at work. And I asked him if I could go back to the studio, and he said yeah. And it was, you know, after talking with you, me and you talked, you know, quite a bit. And after talking with you, I kind of looked at things and I realized that the time when I was having the most fun and I was enjoying things and I felt like I was contributing to something was when I was working with you on Shattering Myths. So I, you know, it took a weekend, thought about it, and Monday I told you that I'm coming back. So yeah, that's kind of why I did it.
So Nick, your concern that I might step away from this, which I was considering doing, because not primarily because I find personally more satisfaction translating Yanoa's word, researching and writing, and sharing in a written form. And I think I'm better equipped at that than I am in the radio format presentation. When Scott informed me, actually shocked me, last week when I thought that he was going to accept the other position, and I was encouraging him to accept the other position. I did not even think for a moment there was the possibility of him returning. From that moment on, for better or worse, my friend, you've got me. I'm committed to the program.
You know what? Time to time, I think that maybe you're just trying too hard for GCN to ask you to leave, because you're not quite watching your language. Well, I mean, I heard you saying "son of a gun."
Yes.
In the previous, I'm guessing you do get some flock of.
Yeah, actually, you can say that. That is legal. The son of a gun is, and even the more derogatory version of that is actually.
I know.
Legal.
I said it once on one of the shows. I suppose.
Yeah.
I was asked to keep my language.
Oh no, no, you can say that. There are seven words that you can't say, and that's not one of those words.
Yeah, don't say no.
Pardon?
I said, don't say them now.
Okay, I'm not going to go say the words now. But there are a series of words. One of the words actually has a context. In fact, several of them do, where you can actually say them. Should you not be saying them in a form where it is a slang, but instead it is descriptive of the act. You can even say most of those seven words, although they're. The thing that gets most people in trouble, and you've never heard me utter them, is what's affectionately called the F-bomb, and you've never heard me use an F-bomb. I don't see a function for it. And the second is called the N-word, and I actually use a formal version of the N-word because I do speak of the country that is called the N-word. You just have to put your emphasis on the proper syllable when you pronounce it, and everything is fine. Now, I would have thought that if GCN was going to have a problem with me, they would have had a problem when I went after Youngevity as a pyramid scheme sign, snake oil.
Do you have some? Do you talk somewhere else, like a blog talk,
yes,
radio?
Yes, I do.
Somewhere,
yeah, I do. Yes,
like
I have a program.
So there's more of you somewhere else.
Yes. In fact, I'm glad you asked. On today, Fridays, every Friday, at 7:30 Eastern Time to 9:00 Eastern Time, I do a program on the Torah on what's called Yada Yah Radio. And if you were to Google Yada Yah Radio, it'll take you directly to the Blog Talk Radio show that I do, that is an hour and a half long, beginning at 7:30 p.m. on Fridays. It's a Shabbat celebration program on the Torah. We'll be back after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Mist, having a conversation with Scott, with Nick, and with Glenn. Fellas, one of the things that became just a bit troubling about the program was that it's just how overwhelmingly bad the news had become. You know, for the most part, for the first year and a half of this program, there was an incident here and there that was really pretty despicable, but there were just a lot of little isolated telltale signs that you shouldn't trust government, you shouldn't trust religion, you shouldn't trust the media and the like. But right now, the whole world's ablaze. And the United States is on the wrong side of every one of these issues. So it's not now it's overwhelming. And I come to work. I come into my office at about 6:00 in the morning to prepare for the show. And every day of stories that need to be told, there's about 8 hours worth of news that needs to be commented on, and it's overwhelmingly bad.
I'll chime in on that one, Yara.
Please.
Well, first of all, rest assured, it's going to get worse, a lot worse, and
yes.
fast.
Yes.
Okay.
Agreed.
And this is where, you know, this is where it tests your actual gut level, heart level comprehension of the word shalom. You know, the peace of Yahweh that surpasses understanding.
Right.
And that surpasses understanding is a very important part of that because
yes.
I have been a news junkie and a gloom and doomer for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And at this juncture, I find myself, you know, totally, you know, Yahusha said to Yisrael, I would have gathered you
right.
as a, you know, a hen gathers her
right.
chicks
right.
Under his wings. So, you know, God is, as a mother bird, offering to shelter us under
right.
his wings, even now. And, the peace of the Ruach Kodesh can actually tangibly, palpably abide within us when we're connected with him. And
right.
and I find that man, as things worsen, I find myself, you know, inwardly retreating to that redoubt on a constant
right.
basis. And the things that busy my mind are not, you know, are not permitted to trouble my heart as badly. And I know that makes that sound almost too formulaic or perhaps even trite to some.
No.
But it's a very real experience for me.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't sound trite or formulaic at all, nor is it foreign. It is exactly my same position where I have no concern personally for myself, for you, for example, on what's coming. I'm not doing the covering the news in Gaza or in the Ukraine or in Syria or in Iraq or anywhere around the world. The Ebola crisis, for example, with concern for you and me. I'm at total peace. I know exactly what's coming. And there is something that you mentioned here, and there's 2 points to this. First, that it's going to get far worse very fast. The term that Yahusha used is the same term that Yahweh uses throughout his prophetic accounts. So when Yahusha is exactly when Yahusha is quoted using birth pangs in Matanya 23:24, he's not inventing that concept as a way of conveying the escalation of events both in frequency and magnitude. Yahweh uses it throughout. By the way, the other thing that's interesting here too, Glenn, is that Yosha's comments that he would like to gather us as a hen would gather her chicks under her wings. The reading of Yashaya Isaiah has God constantly making a similar reference. He said, there's nothing I want more than to be able to gather you in and to protect you and to nurture you and to help you and to raise you. And yet, rather than coming to me, you've run away from me. And so these are the consequences, the horrible things that are going to happen because you've chosen to run away rather than walk to me. So it's
right.
consistent all the way throughout. So we know that it's going,
going
to get worse.
And our chief motivation for doing that, well, aside from cares of the world, being to see riches or temptation
right.
or whatever, is this phenomenon of shame. You know, Adam and Bella experienced shame for the first time after they had transgressed. And so shame often prevents us. And Yahweh himself, you know, shed blood and created coats
right.
to help them cover their nakedness and help, you know, at least in
yeah.
this world, mitigate the problem of shame. And so here we
right.
get here.
Yeah, as long as you come to recognize that the Torah and the set-apart spirit exist as the means to mitigate our shame, to cover us in light so that we appear perfect in Yahweh's eyes. Although I remain flawed, God does not see me that way. And I know that. And that's his commitment. That's what he did on our behalf is to perfect us, to make us appear perfect in his eyes. So once you recognize that he is a perfect garment of light that he adorns us with, there this concern that you can't approach God because of some flaws and some shame dissipate. So it's an understanding of what the covenant represents, what the seven invitations to meet with God represent, what he is offering us, is that, yeah, I know what you, I know who you are, I created you, but I'm not asking you to be perfect. I'm just asking you to trust me.
Right. And then when we actually have internalized that sense of security, then we actually have something to share, you know, to with others, right. Like with the old metaphor, you know, one beggar telling another beggar where to find bread, that sort of thing.
Right. Exactly, but, which is the purpose of going forward, even though the world is falling apart very quickly, even though most people don't even have the cognitive ability to understand the harm that is awaiting them. There are those who are open, who are receptive, who are fleeing their previous trust in government and media and religion, and are now searching for an answer. And the only reliable answer is, yeah, us. Right?
Right. All the more reason to persevere.
Correct.
In the hard times, because that's where your more audience is going to be most receptive and most searching. Speaking of which, I believe I used the word parabolic in reference to what was going to happen with the Ebola thing. And we now see West Germany taking in an Ebola patient, and the U.S. flying an Ebola patient to the U.S. in a Gulfstream jet modified with a special portable isolation unit. Now, as far as I'm concerned, this is sheer foolhardiness. You know, they could have set up an isolation, you know, a tent hospital somewhere with an isolation unit, and taken the family members there to see them, and then had to quarantine the family members for 3 weeks, and then when it was sure they were not infected, they flown them home. But the idea of bringing these hot coals into the bosom of your country and hoping that a flame doesn't get loose is just insane.
Can I parlay on that? Add something to what you've just said. I read that story this morning, and my response was the same. I know many people read it and say, isn't the United States wonderful? We're compassionate. We're bringing this poor victim of Ebola into the United States to give them better care. And I read it as, when you have a disease, that the only way to fight the disease is to quarantine the disease. And that is the only way that this disease can be fought. There is no vaccine. There is no cure. The only solution for Ebola is to quarantine those who may be affected with Ebola. And so to take a person out of the what should be a quarantined area into an area that's not yet infected is like bringing a rat with bubonic plague into your home. Now, this is the extrapolation on that. The most deadly, the most malignant, the most destructive disease ever conceived by humankind is Islam. When we invite Muslims into this country, when we do not isolate Muslims as the cure to this problem, we're doing exactly the same thing.
And that's an ideological, you know, extrapolation, yeah. I'd like to stick to the physical for just a minute and point out another threat. I personally see the fall as looking very grim in terms of the spread of disease, because there have been two Hajjs in Mecca since the advent of the
SARS.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, MERS, Middle East, respiratory now, they call it. And
yeah.
They claim that nobody's brought it back. But, however, last year there were about 30 cases pending during the
There were two Americans that brought it back.
Right, right. And this year, there are almost 300 people dead from it, and it's much more widely. And last year,
the death toll totally now is in the thousands. Right, the death toll now is in the thousands.
So I very much doubt that they're going to get away with that. They're expecting 3.5 million people in Mecca for the Hajj this year. And I very much doubt they're going to duck a bullet on it being exported around the world this year on this Hajj. The third time, I think the third time's a charm on this one.
Right. And your incubation period is correct on Ebola. It's 3 weeks. And during the first week, there really are no symptoms, even though the person is infected and is contagious. And in the second week, the symptoms are all flu-like. And well, by the time you get to the by the time you get to the third week and you actually see the most famous symptoms of Ebola, which are bleeding out through the eyes, the nose, and the gums, the person at that point isn't salvageable. There's 100% of those who reach that stage will die, and any contact with anybody at that stage is certain death for those who have made contact.
Right, and the airline, for example, the airline on which Mr. Sawyer flew, he flew on two different flights and then collapsed in the in the airport in Lagos, Nigeria. They don't have the passenger manifest supposedly for this flight.
Right.
Can't investigate it.
Let me give you a great example. My wife was a year ago. She was on a flight, and the person next to her was like green, sick, and was coughing and had every secretions running out of every orifice of their head. And my wife went to the stewardess and said, listen, you need to get this person off the airplane before they infect not only me but everybody else. And the stewardess was absolutely unwilling to do anything. The person was just hacking, I mean, really sick. The 15 minutes of the flight, this person threw up, vomited all over my wife.
Oh,
when my wife tried to get the airlines to identify what disease this woman had, the airlines was wholly unwilling. And the person is unknown to my wife. So it's not trying to dig into the person's private life. What disease did this person have that vomited all over me? It wouldn't help. One of the things that I wanted to share with Glenn and Nick, based on your comment, is that while we have peace knowing that we have a guaranteed means of withdrawal from the hell that is going to be unleashed on the world, and it's not hell that Yahweh is perpetrating. It's man tormenting his fellow man over these next 10 to 19 years. Is that it's just because I know that I'm not going to endure it doesn't mean that I'm not overwhelmingly antagonistic towards, disgusted by, those who are putting others in a position where it will be ever more difficult for them to avail themselves of the same marvelous offer that Yahweh has offered to us. And so just being at peace with our relationship with Yahweh does not put us at peace. In fact, it puts us in over and hostile conflict with those who are leading the world away from Yahweh and who are the merchants of death.
Right, and he may, I mean, not to get too comfortable, internally have peace, but, you know, there could be persecution. There could be, you know, if you were a member of the Way early on, you were persecuted by the Jewish surrounding culture, which was subjugated to Roman imperial culture, and could have been thrown to the lions or run through the spear or whatever, and that could happen to us.
Right, you had your fingers cut off by... Rabbi Akiba and Shimon Bar Kokhba, the false Messiah. I don't know if you were listening yesterday. I think it was yesterday that I brought this up. I have been studying Rome quite diligently and was trying to understand how a religion like Christianity, which is wholly opposed to its own roots. So how does a religion that's completely opposed to everything that it claims to be based on have beguiled one person, much less an entire empire? And so I began to study the culture of Rome, particularly from Hadrian on, where it became so grossly opposed to Yahweh, his Torah, and his people, as well as his land, and how Rome created the culture where a religion incongruous with its own roots managed to survive and grow. And so the only conflict, the only thing that anyone could say that was in opposition to the evidence that I raised to point this out, to prove that point, was the Christian persecution by Rome. And it's called the Great Persecution, particularly under Diocletian. You know what never occurred? There is not a shred of evidence that there was a Christian persecution perpetrated by the Romans, that Christians were fed to lions, that Christians were mounted on sticks and burned alive to illuminate gardens, that the great persecution is a Christian myth. Yes.
I don't mean to be rude. I need to go. So
okay.
Thank you so much for doing what you're doing, and I will listen to podcasts.
You know what, Nick? When you with the purpose of your call actually was to say stick with it. You enjoy the program, and you want us to continue it on.
Don't go anywhere.
You know, that means a lot.
I'm actually very happy that I found a site that I can download your shows of and not have to listen to all the commercials.
Yes.
But would it benefit you in any way if I will download them from GCN then?
The site that you are going to is called blessyahweh.com, and it not only has them commercial-free and news-free, but it also has introductions that tell you what that hour segment is about. I don't gain anything financially from this program. Nothing. It doesn't mean anything to me one way or another. So since GCN doesn't pay me even a dime for this, it's certainly doing me no harm for you to listen to the program commercial and news free.
Mm. Okay. Well, I will go. I'm gonna go and thank you for doing what you're doing.
Wait, there's a lot of other wonderful things on the Bless Yahweh site. That blessyahweh.com site, it's really a wonderful resource. A good friend of mine manages it. A guy that I've never met actually in person, but communicated with many times in email. He does it at his own expense. And I just want to thank him for doing it. I'm glad you're using what he's done. Glenn, we are going to make the transition to Paul's Poison Pen. I would love for you to stay on with us and continue to contribute. I understand if you do need to go, but that is what we're going to talk about when we return.